That fucking classy bastard.
Yeah. Classy bastard. Look at my classy. And it's Christmas time. We have jinglies. Oh, we're professional now here, mate. Professional. Good evening, I'm Stephen Graham.
Scazius.
And welcome to Christmas Podcast 2023 with the Scazzy's Skull of Christmas.
It's Jack.
Jack. So is that, did you buy it like that with the hat, or have you created it yourself? Have you kitbashed it yourself?
He's dead inside, but he still likes Christmas.
Well, yeah, even that, doesn't that apply to most of us? I tell you, the audio viewers are really missing out on this. Oh, you had such a Hamlet moment there. Oh, Horatio, I knew him well. If we did a Christmas version of Hamlet, that would be there. All right, if you're an audio listener, you need to come look at the actual stream on the channel and see this, because it is just so.
If you're
so
an audio listener, you need to watch this.
You need to become a video watcher. Yeah, yeah. And if you're an audio listener, why don't you join us on the live stream? It's much more fun. You know, the audio version is slightly edited.
Slightly edited.
Well, someone's got to cut out the nonsense at the start and the end and the claps. So,
wait, people cut that out.
Didn't you?
Now I know why they got rid of me.
Oh dear.
Oh mate, oh, you're beautiful, aren't you? Yeah.
That is actually a nice skull. That's a weird thing to say, really. But it's a nice clean skull.
Isn't it?
Yeah. It's hard to tell the difference, to be honest, who's who.
I know. Hang on.
Yeah.
I can't get out. My beard's still in frame.
Oh, dear. I'm sure we can superimpose it. Oh, yes. There we go. Very good. Yep. Dead inside. Yep.
Good job, guys.
Well, happy slightly pre-Christmas. It's the 21st of December, I assure you. You'll notice
bad luck to, like, celebrate Christmas before Christmas?
It's not Christmas yet. I'm not celebrating.
But is that bad luck?
No, I don't think so.
Okay. I hope not.
I think so.
Bad luck this year.
So I hope you're going to enjoy your Christmas in a few days' time. Zaber is... But you know, by the time you watch this, Zaber will probably be well. But as magic has been happening, he's still... In our frame of reference, he's still ill. So once again, I've been joined by the internet's favourite madman, Skaz.
Hi guys, you're on the worst timeline. It's the one where I came back.
The worst timeline. So hope you all enjoyed this. So it's still Chris podcast, a little short one today. We're going to be discussing. I'm going to be discussing a game. So I imagine Skaz has got a few less Skaz. Have you played in the last 10 minutes?
Well,
not
I did.
10 minutes, 2 weeks.
I did. I actually meant to say it on the last one.
Oh, yeah?
Well, I completely forgot. That was so good, I completely forgot
it. Go for it. Tell us all.
Mate, I've been playing Half-Life.
Which one? The original or the Black Mesa? The original one.
Yeah, the original one.
Wow.
Because it's just had an anniversary, hasn't it?
It has, yes.
Half-Life anniversary.
Yeah. It won't be its third anniversary, of course.
Because it had one, because it's some years old.
Yeah. 1990, so it's 25 years old, isn't it? So it's 98, so it'd be 25 years old.
Yeah, see, look at that. 25 years old. My God. Yeah. So Half-Life can...
Somebody born the year Half-Life came out will now be gone through college, university, and be working, actual proper working now.
Mm-hmm. Poor souls. Do you reckon anyone was born, like, I don't know, one anniversary of the first anniversary of Half-Life being released, like someone's dad was really hardcore and they called their son Gordon to be or like head crab.
Kleiner.
G-Man.
Come in, G-Man. Come in, Vortigaunt.
It's like, oh my God.
Yeah.
Yeah,
Don't be nice to your brother, Hound Eye.
Oh, kind of cute.
They are cute little hounds. They make you think of pugs.
Yeah, flat faced, yeah.
flat face, running around, very annoying, and make a high pitched whine and explode.
You'll probably like Half-Life 1 now then, because they're not a problem anymore. I'll get to that. It's an old game.
It is.
98. 25 years old. Right.
As previously discussed.
So the reason why I decided to take a crack at it, well, one, I've just got back into gaming. Two, with the anniversary, I sent you the documentary, didn't I, Ram?
Yeah.
And my youngest son sent me the documentary like the day after. It was like, Dad, you got to check this out. It's Half-Life. It's fucking old. And I was like, yeah, it's old. He's like, yeah, but it's a game by like Valve and Gaben's cool. And I was like, yeah.
Did you break it? Do you remember that coming game coming out?
Yeah. God, I feel old.
you do. Dad, look at this really old game. Yeah, I wasn't. I mean, how old have you been in 98?
I don't know. Can't remember when I was born. 85, I think.
85, so you'd have been...
You were about to say, how old are you now? And I was like, Ram, I don't even know what year this is.
So you can work out, if Half-Life is 25 years old, 98 plus 25 must be 132, 123.
Yeah,
there you go.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah. But obviously, you'd been 13 when it came out. How old's your son?
What, Noodle?
The one who sent you the documentary mentioned to you. So you could see, yeah, you were as old as he is then when that game came out.
I've been saying that to him a lot. Like, Dad, check out these cool games. Like, yeah, mate, I know. Like, I was playing these games when I was in high school, and they're like, but Dad, we're in high school. It's like, yeah, because they're fucking old. And yeah. I'm old too.
Yeah.
Like, hey, Dad, you're going to be dead soon. I was like, yeah. Fingers crossed. A bit morbid for a Christmas special. But
yeah. We had a skull at the fucking start, mate, to be fair.
They are yet to wish me dead. Love you too, boys. But my spuds really like the old Gaben stuff. And they like Half-Life, Half-Life 2. I've got him Half-Life Alyx for Christmas.
Oh.
And a cable for VR.
Oh.
So they can play, because they're now both old enough to play in VR, aren't they? So, you know. So, yeah.
There you go.
You guys get to play Half-Life, but in, you know, a really polished, shiny version. Well, to coincide with the documentary, the anniversary and all that, Valve decided, I guess, kind of, to patch Half-Life 1.
All right.
And what that patch has now done is enabled it to be Steam Deck verified.
Oh, cool.
So it actually has a full set of Steam Deck control, like a control scheme. There have been community layouts to play the game on Steam Deck already, because Steam Deck has customizable controller inputs.
Mm-hmm.
Or Steam has customized controller inputs, so you can make it so like you can play a PC-only game. You can play a real-time strategy game, a game that requires mouse and keyboard or whatever. You can map all of that to work on a pad. Valve have put their own custom controller layouts into Half-Life. And, now you just literally hit the button and bickety-bam, job done. You're playing Half-Life on a fucking Steam Deck.
Yeah.
Not particularly impressive, because again, Half-Life is really old and the Steam Deck's really new, but it's just nice that they've gone back and polished it up to make it work on the deck.
And any sort of like controller layouts, because obviously Half-Life as it came out originally didn't have controller support. It wasn't intended to have it.
No.
Obviously, they added in when they moved over to consoles, but obviously the PC version probably never had that update. So they probably had to go back in and fiddle the code to make it more native so it can support to make it more seamlessly. Imagine the programmer who got the thing. This sacred cow, you're going to go into its guts and do stuff to it. Have fun.
Get your fingers in there nice and deep.
Yeah. Get your finger up its arse nice and deep. Have a good feel around.
Yeah, go on, just Find it. Do the thing. Well, that's what I was curious about, because I've told people before, I've made no secret that I'm not a huge fan of Half-Life. I mean, that's a fun game for a shooter.
Yeah.
Audio's pretty good. Just running around shooting people's pretty good. Gordon runs like a madman.
Oh, he's so fast, that game.
Like, I have never known a scientist to have that much stamina. He's like Usain Bolt.
To be fair, he has got that fancy suit on him, hasn't he, which helps.
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah, yeah, I suppose. But
and also, Gordon must be big into cardio.
Fucking damn right. He's running for hours.
And he didn't skip leg day.
Clearly not. I think the only day he did was leg day.
Yeah. I'm assuming leg day is about running. I have no idea because I'm not American.
No, leg day is just squats. Like, cardio is cardio.
Oh, I thought leg day is about running. But there you go.
Squats and anything to make your legs not like, to make you look less triangular, because you're a bodybuilder, because you've been trying to work on the upper body so much, and then your legs are just like that dodgy little triangle bit at the bottom because you haven't done any work on them. Dweeby little legs.
Detective baby legs. Body.
And you're like, oh, look at that. So cute. Bless. I'll be honest, I was just curious to see how it played on the deck. I've always been terrible at Half-Life. Absolutely terrible at that game. Another game with save scumming galore.
Yeah.
Every few feet.
Yep.
It's not a particularly difficult shooter, but I've always found it to be awkward.
But you do lose health very quickly if you get caught out in the open. But when you get to Marines, they can, if you get caught out just wrong, they can risk your health down like boomf, like that.
Yeah, and I just remember going through Black Mesa, like just scavenging like one health a time from the fucking vending machines and stuff. I was just like, oh my gods, man! Nice that you could do it. It was a very very interactive thing for the time. Like, I mean, like the environments and stuff, like. Playing with the microwave, going to the vending machines and all that. And I'd always get lost, man. And even after all these years, I went back in and I was still getting lost. I was like, how do I get through this? Yeah. Is there a thing I have to do to get through this door? How do I get through this door? Nah, surely that's not going through the window. That's got to be bulletproof. Oh, I go through the window. Oh, I've been running around for about 10 minutes. That was a bit stupid. Through the window I go. Job done. Also, there's a random bit with crates or like storage containery things, like hanging over a ledge.
Yeah.
It's like right at the start or right near the start. And you have to just jump across them and then go through and along, if you get what I mean. You're up high, jump,
I know the bit you mean,
jump into the... Dude, I tried doing that in Black Mesa. And I could not do that to save my fuck. Well, I did it, but like I died so many times doing that. It was like a simple first person jump. I'm like, my mate DeWald would throw himself off of a bridge having to do this. All right. And then I get to it in Half-Life and I'm like, oh no, not this bit. Not this bit. Like, I'm having Vietnam flashbacks at this point, like rocking backwards and forwards on my chair going, I ain't gonna make it. I ain't gonna make it. Cruised it. Like Gordon. That man can jump.
Yeah.
He's a real Olympic long jumper. Gordon Freeman, man.
Yeah.
But yeah, just dicking around with a game that wasn't designed for controls on a Steam Deck. And it works great. Oh my God, it was fun. I've never had that much fun playing Half-Life.
Yeah.
And I was like, I wonder, because there was a console version of Half-Life, weren't there?
There was.
Half-Life 1 on PS2.
Yes.
And that had an aim assist on it. I was like, well, I wonder if they've put an aim assist in it, because I don't remember Half-Life on PC having an aim assist at all. Like, aim assists weren't a thing back then, right?
Well, yeah.
Like, unless you're on console.
Aim assist was your mouse.
But yeah, it's it. Like, your aim assist was...
The fact that you used a mouse. Yeah, your aim assist was... Can you click on something on the screen? Yes. There you go.
You've done it. Nailed it. First try.
Yeah.
But on the deck, it actually has an aim assist.
Does it? Is that because of the analog sticks? You're not... Or is it like a mouse input on the deck, or is it like an analog input
for. Yeah, you've got an analog stick and a trackpad, so you can do both.
Yeah.
But the but you know your little cursor, say where you're aiming,
yeah,
will kind of magnetically stick. Gordon will kind of stick it to.
Can you switch it off?
I don't know. I didn't really look. I didn't look. I imagine you could if you weren't playing on the Steam Deck. I mean, if I had to be honest with you, I found it to make that auto aim or that aim assist. I found that to make it more fun because I was more worried about positioning than I was about really anything else. I was like, if I can get here, he'll snap on and I can just shoot. I don't have to like sit there and focus on aiming and trying to fight a control stick. I can just run at it and shoot. And it made the game feel so much quicker and just so much better. Obviously, on mouse and keyboard, it's not a problem. You still run at it and just drag it. But I felt so nervous playing a full-blown first-person shooter, PC first-person shooter, on a pad. But that one little tweak really made it. And like even like quick save, and that is on a trackpad. So you touch the Steam Deck has got two trackpads on it.
Yeah.
Touch the trackpad, swipe up, and then click the trackpad, like save, touch the trackpad, swipe down, click it, load. Like all of the functionality was right there on the deck. I was like, this is amazing. You know, you'd think it's kind of a sacrilege to consoleize Half-Life, but I thought it was really, really good.
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing inherently bad about doing stuff like that if it's done well. Mm-hmm. I think people's complaints generally with air quotes consolidation is when it's half-assed and rushed, or they push it too far one way or the other. And I think there is, for a long time, consolidation was basically a byword for making it really easy and for like almost like simplify it down to resource or base level. Yeah. And I think game designers have realized actually, for some reason, there was a thought process that console gamers didn't like complicated things. It's almost like a bit snobbery in a way. Like, well, console gamers won't get this.
Kind of like how the Japanese were with us all those years ago. Yeah. Oh, Western gamers, they'll never understand this.
Yeah,
don't give it to them. Or let's give them a really dumbed down version of it because they won't understand the complexities of an RPG. It's like.
But then on flip side, they used to like, oh, Western gamers love games that are really, really hard, so let's make the game really hard for that market.
It's like, and thanks, guys.
Yeah. Yeah.
But Western gamers, they don't like titties. Let's take those out.
Yeah, they're like
that.
They've
been doing
that
since the 80s.
Yeah.
Western gamers don't like playing with girls.
They don't know what girls are. They've never seen one.
Goddamn basement dwellers. What's a girl?
Don't know what girls are. So has it
girl?
I might get cooties. So has it made you a bit of a convert to Half-Life, would you say?
I don't know. I still think Half-Life's kind of cheese. You know, it's a solid game. It's a solid franchise. I understand why a lot of people like it. Just it's not up there for my first-person shooters because at the time I was a console gamer.
Yeah,
I liked playing games like GoldenEye. I liked playing games like Perfect Dark. I liked playing games like Turok Dinosaur Hunter. I was still playing Duke Nukem 3D. Half-Life was always a bit. Because that's a slow start, man. Like, Half-Life is a slow start, but...
Yeah.
Going back and playing original Half-Life versus playing Black Mesa, it was interesting to see, because I hadn't played in so long. I must have actually played it on, like, an old Steam account, because apparently the time I played on my Steam Deck was, like, the first time I played original Half-Life on my account, which was bizarre. Because I'm certain I've played it before. It's interesting to see how going from like upping the graphics, I found there were so many things telegraphed in Half-Life 1 that I actually saw that I didn't originally notice when I was playing Black Mesa.
Mm-hmm.
Black Mesa being like the remake, polished,
the fan remake, yeah.
Yeah. Because like there are certain bits where the game will telegraph where you need to go. But because in Black Mesa, maybe something was lost, or like I wasn't quite looking where I needed to be, because of how polished it was, it almost wasn't as obvious, if that makes any sense.
Valve are very good at A, environmental storytelling, and B, they are really good at guiding the player, but not overtly guiding the player. So you think things like Left 4 Dead, how you made your way through the level, and some levels actually seem quite complicated, but yet you somehow always made it through them fairly easily. You always knew where you were going.
We had a bit of trouble, man.
There was one level which we got a bit lost on, but in general, most levels we knew, we just went for, and we found our the level. We went in the same right direction all the time. We didn't really get lost. There's like one bit which we did get a bit stuck on, but that's because we missed an upstairs window. But in general,
windows.
Yeah, and it wasn't the Microsoft version this time. But in general, we worked out where we were going, what we were doing, and so forth. And I think that Valve are really good at level design, and I think they take a dedicated methodology of. Well, I don't know if they still do it, but they used to, when Half-Life 2 was being developed, they used to bring in, like, people who weren't very good at games. They used to play test them with people who weren't very good at games, like, reading how they use games, seeing how well they could pick up the levels and stuff. Because they thought, well, if we can get someone who isn't a gamer, so they were, like, getting, like, people's, like, bring your dad in. Get your dad to come in and play a game with us, you know, just to have a game, see how they picked up and how quickly they, and if they could get someone who could pick up very intuitively how to play a game, they knew they were doing the right thing, and they weren't afraid to completely scrap levels and redo them. One thing that I like in the later Valve games, Half-Life games, was they put developer commentaries in them. And if you enable them, you can go through and basically have like a DVD commentary. It'd actually be quite nice if perhaps they could go back to Half-Life 1 and pull some of the original devs across and actually almost make a developer commentary for the original one. So you can go back through and actually listen and hear them talk about their original design plans and stuff. That'd be quite cool.
Yeah, it would be neat. Yeah. I mean, they've got a documentary for that now, but it'd be nice to see it as you play it, kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah. It's like in game, it's different when you're actually there in the level and say, oh, we changed this and so forth. But
I think the first one I saw with that was Portal.
Episode 1 had it. Portal 2 had it.
All right.
And it's, yeah, it was interesting. It's like, okay, we changed this here because we found players were doing this. So we changed this too many times and iterations and so forth. It's really interesting their thought processes and how they're not scared to scrap everything and start again.
Yeah.
If it doesn't work. So.
I thought it was neat. Like, another one, this is right at the start. Because like, as I said, it had been a long time since I played and I got lost. I get lost all the time in Half-Life. There's no two ways about it. No secret. I'm terrible at that game. So, you know, in Black Mesa, everything starts going to pop. And there's that, the door. You go all the way back up. And there's...
I think you mean after the Resonance Cascade.
Yeah. Everything goes to shit. You head back up to the top.
Yeah.
And the door's locked in what's it called? Half-Life 1.
Yep.
In Black Mesa, it's open and you can see like the tram tracks and you'll just fall to your death.
Yeah.
There's an air vent behind you that kind of pops open.
Yeah.
Because of the extra detail in Black Mesa, I just didn't ever see it.
Yeah.
So when I was playing Black Mesa, I was like, where the fuck am I supposed to go? It's been so long. Where do I go? But as I was playing Half-Life 1, original Half-Life 1 on Steam Deck, I was like, oh yeah, it was there. It's there. Yeah. Oh, I see it. There it is. I've got to go there.
That's because the environments are so simple, something different stands out.
Yeah. And I loved that. I loved that. It was nice to go back and go, it looks all right. It still holds up. Fucking magnetic ladders.
I love magnetic ladders. I miss magnetic ladders.
Dude, I don't know how. Just before the cascade, when you have to go up to the top, press the button, then come back down. Dude, I glitched. I was like stuck on the ladder and I had to wiggle Gordon down the ladder. He would not go down that ladder.
I miss the amenity ladders. They are so good.
So come on, Gordon, get down the ladder. He's like, that was all right. That was fun. As I say, I just thought it was really neat that they did kind of semi-consolize the game. It played pretty well. It looked pretty good. The audio is still phenomenal. The sound design in those games is pretty fucking up there, especially for what they had at the time.
Yeah, I remember finding I found a review from PC Game at one point used to archive a lot of the old issues. I found one of their original issues with the Half-Life review in it. Mm-hmm. And I'm just going through, and it's like, and the first he says, look at the fantastic lighting effects. I thought, well, for the time they were fantastic lighting effects.
Yeah.
Actually, a picture of like a Vortigaunt, it's like laser sort of like firing out. Half-Life, interestingly, talking about games I used to play every year, Half-Life Blue Shift, I used to play that every year for New Year's.
I'm going to say I don't think I've ever played it.
So, yeah, so they in terms of sort of quality, Half-Life is at the best of the three. Opposing Force is also very good. Blue Shift is, I think Blue Shift was a, it was originally a, like, almost like a extra, when did Blue Shift come from? It was on the Dreamcast, I think. Blue Shift was like an extra, let's say, levels put on the Dreamcast version of Half-Life, I think. And they then eventually ported it to PC.
All right.
So it's not very long. You can play in about a few hours. It's not very long. But you play Barney, the security guard.
I was going to say, that's the one you play as the security guard. I don't think I've played that one.
Yeah, Blue Shift is not very long, but I used to quite like Blue Shift. I remember, I got it for Christmas one year, and then I played it after Christmas, and I remember sort of like playing completely on New Year's Eve. So I got into this little habit of every year I'd start playing on Boxing Day and make sure I finish it on New Year's Eve. That was what I used to do with FIFA, actually. FIFA, I always used to make sure I finished the day before Christmas Eve because I like doing. I was a bit sad then. But yeah, I mean, have they just done half? So you say patch Half-Life. Have they done the others as well? Or just Half-Life?
The others work. They've always worked, but I don't think they've had quite the treatment of.
Because in theory, it should just be a. It should just be an engine patch, shouldn't it? In theory.
Well, I mean, the controls, at least, you could just go. You could, in theory, just copy the control layout. Because it's just Steam Deck. Like they haven't. I doubt they've really done much other than the auto aim thing. Obviously, you know, stick is going to operate one way, trackpad's going to operate another way. Just map those using Steam input to like Half-Life 2, and that it should be fine. I mean, I'd happily play it. I've played tons of PC only games on the Steam Deck. If they haven't patched them, I hope they do.
Oh, because they did.
And anyone that doesn't own a Steam Deck yet, do it. Like, just get one. For fuck's sake, just get one. Because it's a phenomenal piece of hardware. Absolutely amazing piece of hardware. Playing PC-only games, games designed specifically for PC with no console ports, on this device that doesn't have, like, a mouse per se. It's got, you know, trap. You can play all of it. City Skylines, fucking Half-Life, all sorts on this fucking device. And the patch being out, a whole new generation goes, oh, mate, Half-Life on their Steam Deck, and it works great.
And a whole new generation goes, so when did the third episode come out?
Yeah, where is it?
Well, last about
time,
that.
Motherfuckers.
Yeah, about that. Oh, I see. Oh, okay.
It's never going to happen. It can't happen.
No, they're allergic to number 3.
Mm-hmm.
No,
Team
Left 4 Dead
3, where is it?
Left 4 Dead 3. Mm-hmm. Oh, no, they did bring them, so they called it Back for Blood, didn't they?
Portal 3.
Yeah.
Let's go ahead. Look, here's Portal. Portal,
to be fair to Portal, that did the second one did finish the game off, so there is sort of no...
Portal 2 and 2/3.
Yeah.
Team Fortress 2 and 3/4.
Yeah. They might eventually release it. You never know.
Never know. Never know.
You never know.
Maybe we'll have to wait for the next big leap in hardware for Valve to go, we need another Half-Life game.
So basically, we're not getting a Half-Life until they invent a holodeck.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, you didn't get Half-Life. The only reason you got Half-Life Alyx was because it was for the Index. I still want an Index, man. That thing's old as fuck, but I want one.
I'd love an Index. It's weird thing how old it is, but yeah, I would love an Index.
But the here's the trick, though, mate. Regardless of how old it is, it's direct connect to a PC.
Mm.
So visually speaking, it's going to be superior to the Quest in that anyway. Yeah. I mean, the Quest is going to look good, but because the Quest is all compressed video being streamed to the headset, it's never quite going to look as sharp, even with a higher resolution display. Isn't ever going to look as sharp as a direct full bandwidth HDMI connection.
Have you looked much at the Quest 3 at all?
Hmm?
Have you looked much at the Quest 3 at all?
I want one. I don't have the money for one.
No.
If I had the cash to buy another VR headset just to whap in my backpack, because I wouldn't get like a fancy strap or anything for it like I did my Quest 2, just so I could kind of collapse down because it's quite thin,
mm-hmm.
I would have one in a heartbeat.
Yeah.
Because then it's got all the foveated rendering tech, so it can upscale things more as well. Only render the center of the image and not worry about the outsides, just let that blare out. And I reckon it'd be amazing. Apparently, even VR chat works somewhat okay on Quest 3. are you tempted by?
I am tempted by it. I'm sort of at a stage of my Rift still works good enough. If I had the money, I would upgrade, but my Rift still works good enough, so I'm quite happy to stick with the Rift.
Rift's solid. I know a bunch of people who still use HTC Vives. I mean, personally, I would still happily use the CV1.
Yeah.
That you gave me all that time ago, because that headset's fucking the audio on it's fantastic, at least.
It is, yeah.
Tracking's pretty solid, allows for 3-point. The only issue is the L-ware barn doors.
Yeah.
Or the
screen door.
Screen door. Yeah. Screen door. What the fuck am I on about? Barn doors, that's for
loading. I'll say barn doors, I'm thinking, he's thinking of cameras now, but I know what he means.
Yeah, he's gone completely soft in the melon because it's Christmas.
Yeah. It's Christmas, Theo, it's the time for miracles.
It's like, oh, no. Get Quest 3.
I might do. Why
get
not?
Quest 3 and an Index and full body tracking.
Yeah, full body tracking. I have a Tron suit on.
That'd be great.
I can track down to my individual toes.
Mate, I could actually just imagine you being in VR, because when me and you first started talking VR, where was that? When did we start the podcast? It was episode 1, weren't it?
Yeah, we talked about VR
talking
episode 1,
Rift
yeah.
and the Omni.
Yes, the Omni. Going for a walk in Skyrim.
Mate, that's the only reason I'd play Skyrim.
Just go for a nice little walk.
Like, if there was ever a game overrated that really sucked, Skyrim.
Oh, I like Skyrim.
Fucking hate Skyrim. There's something about that game and giving me vampirism every 30 seconds.
Just don't get bit by a vampire.
You've just cured your vampirism. You've just, like, you got vampirism the first time you went to sleep. Groovy. Now you've got to travel around to cure your vampirism.
It's all the people you hang out with.
Mate, I cured my vampirism, and I shit you fucking not. I think I left the area that I cured myself of vampirism, and within about 10 minutes, contracted vampirism again. I was like, fuck this.
It's like coronavirus all over again, isn't it?
It was. Bethesda was trying to tell us, man.
Yeah.
Just had that nuke scene out of fucking Fallout 3. Just, there you go, done. Fucking.
Yeah, this is why it's an advantage if you have access to the console.
Yeah, so you can just put the item that you need into your inventory. I've never liked doing that because it feels cheap. But in Skyrim, oh my God. The game's like, hey, Skaz has picked up Skyrim again. Vampires. Go on, get him. So fuck off.
There have been times where I've fought my way through a dungeon, got to the last bin, oh, this lock, you ain't got skill level half, you intend to pick this lock. You kidding me? I've come all the way here, and you're not going to say I can't pick the lock. Console open, click, command open. Oh, I've picked it.
Oh, no, mate, the lock just disintegrated as Ram pulls out his console-grade bolt cutters.
Yeah, yeah. It's like... I had that issue. I had a broken save in Fallout 4, where basically it got sort of cuts and like midway someone was trying to shoot somebody else. I could never get the drop on him to kill him first before he shot someone else. So next time I reload, I quickly hit the console button, clicked the NPC, went kill, and killed him off so I could get some parts to do a bit. Like,
and just clears the map. NPC's gone.
Well, I see an issue. I actually bought somebody who's like really hostile to with this faction. I didn't realize, and I got there, and everybody hated him. And my option was basically because I fast traveled there, so he spawned there, and everybody hates me and him. And I was like, I've got to kill everybody here, or I have to try and run and hope the guy follows me as far away so we can get away and fast travel away, or I go into the console, click on it, but I say, set threat level to, like, zero, and then that's fine, it fixes it. It's like, that
fixes... Everyone's his mate now. They're all inviting him in for tea and biscuits.
Yeah, yeah. I really used to hate you, but something happened where the whole world time paused. Now I like you.
He's got a knife to his throat. Oh, hey, mate, how you doing? Pulls it away.
Yeah, something like that, something like that. I'm glad.
You Fallout 4 as well.
It's not like Bethesda
Fallout
games.
Fallout 1 and 2... I can handle that. Fallout 3 sucks giant donkey dick. And Fallout 4, just get in the bin, man.
New Vegas is good. I love New Vegas. New Vegas is one of my favorite Fallouts. Because that's made by basically the original devs.
Was that the one with the...
That's in the desert. The Mojave Desert, where you have Mr. House. And you've got the dam. And you've got the one that's been... You've got the Roman Legionnaires and like the... So that was made. So Fallout New Vegas was basically what Fallout 3 was going to be if it had been made by the original devs.
If it weren't made by Bethesda.
Yeah. So there's a lot of like still the sort of like storyline plot that got pulled over to it.
Mm-hmm.
And Fallout New Vegas, I didn't like New Vegas when I first played it, but then I went back to it and played it again, and it's become my favorite Fallout.
So what was your first Fallout?
First, we've been Fallout. No tell, I did say Fallout 3, but actual fact, when Fallout 3 was coming out, I went back and downloaded and played the original Fallouts, Fallout 1 and Fallout 2. Yeah. And then played 3. I didn't mind 3. Parts of it were good. The big disappointment.
That ending.
Yeah, the ending's bullshit.
Most of the game's bullshit, to be fair.
The patch fixes the ending. When you have to release a patch to fix your ending. As DLC. What disappointed me about Fallout 3 was, a bit like we were discussing 2 weeks ago on the last podcast, when you got to like Washington, D.C., it was just like area separated by loading screen by loading screen. It's like, well, you've got the tech to make a big open world. You get to a city and you separate all into loading screens.
Yeah.
And that ruins the immersion. It's like, make it... I can handle load screens when you're in a building underground somewhere. That's fair enough. But out in the open, just make it a big open city. You should have the tech. You've got the tech to do that. Do it. And it made the areas feel really small and cheap. So I didn't particularly like that bit. But yeah, New Vegas was good. I didn't mind. Fallout 4, I didn't mind. I could see what people did. Yes, Fallout 4's got problems. The main one being the outpost system is just a pain in the ass.
The building bit.
Yeah, not so much the building bit, but the fact that every time you go back, it's pressed to say, yeah, there's an outpost that needs help. So, can't these outposts just fucking look after themselves for a little bit?
Because that's padding and that's gameplay.
Right, listen, I'll say, Preston, come here, Preston. You guys were born in this desert, right? You grew up in this violent world. You were born from the day dot learning how things. I've been asleep in a fucking vault.
Mm-hmm.
And I come out wearing nothing but a jumpsuit, and I'm better than all of you. What the fuck happened to you guys? Just sort yourselves out. For one fucking time, there's like 12 people here. There's one raid ahead in your way. Can't you guys deal with this?
No.
It's like the worst. It's like, fucking hell. No one, you, this is like being, this is very much like being a manager, really. This is like being a manager in charge of a really ineffective team of people. You just have to micromanage everything. Oh, you're going to do that, are you? Okay, here we go. It just brought about flashbacks, guys. What did it brought about flashbacks?
You're a manager dealing with Gen Z kids.
Yeah, it's like, oh, should we do this? What do you think? Oh, customers bought something. They've got the receipts. It's in date. Should I refund them? Yes, you fucking should. Just do it. You don't need to bother me about it. Sorry.
But they do.
I could go down a really ranty route there. I'm going to stop myself there. I'm not going to talk anymore.
Suffolk Ram, Fallout 4, the manager simulator.
Super, yeah.
If you want to know how tedious it is being a manager in retail.
Yeah. Play the outpost next year. Just start doing, just get loads of outposts in Fallout 4 and then see what it's like being a manager.
I don't even think I got that far, to be honest, in Fallout 4. Like, Chalky kept on trying to get me to play that game years and years and years ago. I took a crack at it. But this was of the time when Chalky's like, if you haven't put in like 50 hours into a game, you can't judge it, kind of thing. And I was like, dude, this game sucks balls.
You should know if you're gonna like, you should have an inkling whether you're gonna like a game within 2 hours, I reckon.
Yeah, I don't even know if I got 2 hours into Fallout. Fallout 4.
I got, basically, there's a point in Fallout 4, a bit like Fallout New Vegas, where, like, you reach a point where the path splits into, like, 4 different ways. And once you pick a route, you're kind of sort of committed to it. And I got to that sort of stage of Fallout 4 and couldn't decide what I was going to do, so I stopped playing.
Sure. I think I gave up, like, I was in, like, Power Suit right at the start.
That's the other big issue. That's the other big issue for us. You get given all the cool stuff right at the start.
No, you haven't earned it. I couldn't stand it, dude. I just ran at people and just like, yeah, this is boring. And you know, like everyone got, what was the thing they introduced in Fallout 3 where you could like shoot off legs and arms and heads and stuff? Like, yeah, and everyone was like, everyone would literally jerk off over that. Like, look at all the gore. I was like, this is so boring. Mm. Like, when did Fallout become a fucking like a shooter? When did I start playing Fallout like a shooter? Where's all the like the clever writing and the
in New Vegas
shit?
In New Vegas,
where is it? It's not in this game.
Yeah, in New Vegas. In Vegas, I want to play at some point. I'm gonna play New Vegas with a low intelligent level because they actually make dialogue change and stuff.
Yeah.
It's like, there's like a bit where you go into like a factory, you go upstairs, you meet a robot. Now, if you're a normal character, you have to try and find this key code to like disable the robot. If you're a stupid character, the robot comes up to you, challenge you. You can just shout ice cream at him, and it happens to be the right answer.
Nah, that's neat. That's neat.
There's a character who does like upgrades. You can go like, you can upgrade. You can basically pay, and they'll give you an implant that upgrades like one of your core stats. If you pay a really stupid character, they give you the upgrade. They give you the upgrade to your intelligence for free. They feel sorry for you.
That reminds me, because Bard said that he'd played a CRPG years ago like that. Wasn't Fallout, it was some other, like, I don't even remember what it was. I was going to say Pillars, but he said he'd play it, and he said it was, he really enjoyed it because of how that kind of thing worked. Like, if you fucking...
I've got it on my Steam. Keep talking, I've got it in my Steam library.
Yeah, he just said, like, you know, if you had a really low intelligence stat, like, it would just completely change the game. You know, something that, like, no one would ever do. Like, cause you'd never think to play the game as a complete dimwit. But he said, yeah, it changes so much when you do it. It's so funny. And, you know, that people actually talk to you like you're a complete fucking moron. Because you are a complete fucking moron. But because you, the player, are not a complete moron, you kind of catch how funny it is.
Yeah. RPG.
I know a lot of games have done that, but it's, you know, just when people tell you the shiny stuff like that, I'm like, that's pretty cool.
Yeah. It's kind of annoying now. I've got it. Divinity Original Sin.
Yeah. Was it?
Yeah, I'm sure it's Divinity Original Sin, I'm sure, is the one he was
I thought that was newer than the one that Bard was on about, because I think the one that Bard had played, he said there was a new version of it, and they took out a bunch of the characters he liked. But, you know, either way, you know, I know a load of games have done that kind of thing, but like I've always liked in, was it Fallout 1 or 2, you could talk down the end boss. Like you just talk him down. You know, you don't have to fight him, just talk him down.
You can do that in Fallout New Vegas as well.
I think, can't you do something similar in Fallout? That's not really the end boss, is it? Because the ending's still kind of set in stone, but you can tell some geezer in Fallout 3 he's a twat and he just pisses off.
I believe there is, yeah, a character you're dirtying. I believe
but
so.
Like, I know I just gave that as a positive to Fallout 1 or 2, but Fallout 3 can just rot.
The one thing that breaks Fallout New Vegas is because they want to put you plenty of options to do the talky charisma route. If you max out your speech skill, you can bypass so many encounters. Because so many encounters, that's basically the only source, whereas you might have like, there's so many skills based on combat and so forth. They only saw like one base around like negotiation is your speech skill. Mm-hmm. So if you max out, it basically is like a there's so many encounters where like somebody threatens you and you can just like use your speech skill and basically just like talk to them and convince them otherwise and they'll just back down.
Yeah.
That basically if you max out speech, you almost got there's so many things that are basically on easy mode at that point. That's the only sort of criticism for it these days. They don't make enough use of your other abilities to talk to people and so forth. It would almost be better if speech wasn't a skill per se. Because there are things like Fallouts where like, if your science skill is high enough, you can talk science to somebody and you'll get a different result. If your strength is high enough, you can sometimes talk about strength-based things and so forth. But that's actually better than having the speech skill because it makes you spread your code off. Obviously, like you, otherwise speech just bypasses so many things. It's so handy to have high speech skill in Fallout New Vegas. But you can basically just like, you convince like the sort of leader of this army to just like take his entire army away.
You've got to talk your way out of a problem, man. You've got to talk your way out of trouble.
Yeah. I actually think the best speech mechanic, like sort of negotiation stuff mechanic, is Deus Ex Human Revolution. They have encounters where you have to basically, you're into like a cutscene where you'll speak to somebody and you'll have a discussion with them and you have to basically listen to their little tells and cues and stuff and give the right responses. If you get the right upgrade, it basically will analyze its stuff and it'll like say what their build, it'll like describe what their personality is like and you'll have to see how they respond to what you say and so forth. And you actually have to have good sessions. They work really well. And they're probably my favorite of the way of speech or in game, because you actually have to listen to what they're saying and modulate your response back to them.
Sure.
To get what you want. So what approach that works with one person won't work with another person.
I still need to go through and play that again.
Yeah. That's a good system.
There are some good games out there. Not many.
Oh, yeah. They're. The thing is, it's a bit like books, a bit like films, a bit like TV series, is the ones that we remember from the past are the ones that were good at the time. All the shit ones you've forgotten about.
Yeah.
So you only remember the good stuff. And there was a lot of shit. If you actually look back at what games came out 20 years ago, there's an awful lot of shit come out.
Yeah, of course, there were like thousands of them, weren't there? Like every year, thousands of games come out. And you're like, you can only ever remember like fucking like one or two.
Yeah, but you forget all those. You just remember the good ones, but it shows you at the current day. You see all the games that are shit, and you don't. But I
suppose actually thinking about it, like just saying it like that, thinking about our games of the year lists, like we both had to look back to see what we've played because neither of us could remember what the fuck we'd played this year. I know I can.
Yeah, I tend to do that. I have to. Interestingly, what my pick of game of the year, I did remember. I did remember at times. So, anyway, when I did go back for the list and go, I didn't play that this year. That was a good game. Obviously, we'll come to game of the year shortly. I think my game of the year was, from the moment I played it, I was quite sort of like, this is probably going to be my game of the year, and my opinion hasn't really changed that much.
All right.
So we'll discuss that later.
So what have you been playing, right?
Well, I have been playing a... I didn't realize it was by the same devs. Probably about 2020, I think, or 2021, I discussed a game called Stories Untold, right, which was a game which was set like in like a... It was like a set of series, like sort of like 1980s or Tales of the Crypt style scenarios that you were playing in. It's like sort of like, and you had to like sort of like play these different sort of storylines, they all linked together. And it was like mostly like you were sat in one location, you didn't really move, you didn't move around much. And then it was quite creepy in certain parts, science fiction-y, it was really well done. Well, I've been playing the game by the same devs. I didn't realise the same devs later on. But it's a similar sort of thing. It's called Observation. And it is a neat, really neat little concept, actually. You are play as an AI on a space station. But your only way of sort of like interacting and so forth is you basically have security cameras dotted all around the space station, which you can move between and interact with. And once you're in studio, you can like sort of zoom in on like objects like a door and you can interact with them. It is a beautiful looking game, really well done. When I first loaded it up, I actually was like debating whether it was live action or not, like FMV, or whether it's actually graphics, because obviously the camera you're in has got like a sort of effect place at the top of it. You're in the spaceship, and it's so nicely done, so nicely detailed. It actually looked like a real set. I thought, is this like FMV type thing? It wasn't until I saw one of the other characters actually sort of, even when I saw the other character, she was in a suit, I was like unsure. But then she moved, and as soon as she moved, I was like, oh, I can tell it's animated. You can still tell when it's on... an NPC moves from the animation, if it's really well done, you can tell they're not human. You can tell if they're a bit sort of stiffer, they hold themselves slightly differently to how a human would.
Okay.
And then obviously when I saw, watched it the helmet, I was like, oh, this is an FMV. But I was, until I saw like the NPC's face, I was sort of really on the edge of like, is this FMV or is this real? It looks so good. So it's set on a space station, very similar to like, sort of, it's sort of like, set near future, and it's based on very grounded, so that space station looks like the inside of the ISS. You know, very cramped, very white and clean. But every space is at a premium. And the basic idea of the game is something's happened to your space station. You know, the space station's out of control, it's spinning, and you as the AI have had your memory corrupted, so you don't remember anything. Which is handy as a player, means you discover things as you go along together because your memory's corrupt. And basically, the very first thing that happens is the character will basically ask you to give you, like, she'll ask for like administrator access. She'll say, give you a voice print, and you have to basically, and you have to act like an AI, so you have to analyze the voice print and see, oh, this matches someone on record. And the first time she speaks to you, her voice is a bit garbled from like spit, and it doesn't match. So you can then choose to either accept or reject her, and so accept her as a, oh, I'm going to listen to your commands or reject her. And I accepted her when she spoke, because I thought, well, I'm sure it's probably right. So I'm going to be a great AI, I am. And then she'll like ask you if you, so you have to basically like pair things, so like a door, where you have to pair with it, and then you can open it. Some little bits you have to do like little mini games, like do stuff, like there'll be like bits where you want to like sort of, there's a faulty part of the ship you have to jettison at the sort of early part of the game, and you'll have to do like a little mini game to jettison and so forth. But it's she always asks you questions and stuff, and you can respond to him by like, you'll get given like a list of responses you can give back to talk to him back with. And you are the AI of the ship, so you're monitoring the ship as well. So like early on, so like the first sort of prequel part, she'll say, oh, the fire alarm will go off. She goes like, oh, where is it? And your name is Sam, because you are assistant administration and maintenance. So you're called Sam.
All right.
And where's the fire? So you have to jump through the cameras to try and find the fire. And when you see the fire, you have to then, like, you have like a button called respond. And you basically press it, and you click on the fire, and you'll then speak to her and say, there is a fire in compartment such and such. And she'll then have to like give you instructions to deal with it. And you have to take those instructions out. It's really done. It's not very long. It's probably about 4.5-5 hours long. I was playing through. It took me three nights to play through it. And the last one, actually, I finished off fairly quickly because I didn't realize how close I was to the end when I saw Quit House. But your goal is to work out where you are, work out what happened. There's like a strange entity that comes aboard the ship that you have to communicate with. It's been like it's almost like cosmic horror. It's also there's some cosmic horrors. It's very clearly inspired by like 2001: A Space Odyssey. There's a bit of cosmic horror in there. What I love about it is how well done like the environment is. So when you are in your little space, it's basically the ship you're on is called the space station. It's called Observation, and it splits into three. It's got like four areas. You've got like the area you start on is the European module, which is like all the EAS module stuff. Because your character is she's Welsh. The character you're helping is Welsh.
All right.
So a
fictional character helping a fictional character. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
No, yeah, but Wales ain't real.
But that's connected to like the what they call the UC, so like the universal connector, and that's connected to a Russian set of space modules and a Chinese set of space modules, and you'll basically explore these areas as the game goes on. You'll explore more, and so your main interaction is just jumping from camera to camera, accessing parts, and it's basically a puzzle game. So she'll give you like, okay, we need to do this, and you have to figure out how to do it. So, like, okay, you need to find like a communication with this other space station. Okay, I need to go to like the astroponic center, observe it, find it on the picture, find the delegation, and upload it. And it doesn't hold your hand too much. You have to sort of like work, figure out for yourself how to do it. It's pretty sort of obvious most of the time, but it's not so obvious that you haven't got to think about it a little bit. Later on, fairly early on, you'll also gain access to a little like flying sphere that you can fly around the ship in. And being a fairly realistic one, the spaceship's in zero gravity, so your sphere can like move all 6 degrees of freedom. You know, you can yaw, pitch, and so forth. But it means flying around is confusing. It's claustrophobic, but it's meant to be. It's meant to be like that. You are on a ship that's been severely damaged. It's small and it's cramped. You are having to try and figure out your way around and navigate yourself around. And you'll basically fly yourself around and solving more puzzles. You have to go on space walks. You'll go outside. It looks absolutely beautiful outside. You know, with the views, you get to see it absolutely. It's very atmospheric, quite creepy in its way. It's a really neat little puzzle game. The storyline is very indie storyline in that. Indies like devs like ending storylines on mysteries with not really answering. The end game ends, but doesn't really answer anything. And that's what the storylines are like. Because they always seem to do. It's like, oh, let's see if a mysterious open-ended ending. Okay, good. Great. And that's what all it is. But it's a real fun little thing. What I like about it is it's different. You know, the idea of like, okay, your only interactions is through cameras and stuff. And you can move the cameras about and see people. I mean, some neat things like, if she says, oh, I'm going to go for this other sex of ship, you can, like, follow her through the cameras as she floats away through the ship. You can watch her on cameras and follow about. But you don't have to. You can just, because you have, like, a little map that she used to move around, and it shows you, like, all the nodes, and you can just hover over and you'll see, like, a little preview. You'll be able to watch them move around and stuff. It's really neatly done. The whole sort of acting as an AI is quite neat done. You'll have, like, system alerts where you have to, like, respond and give, and, like, construct and she'll ask you questions and stuff, and you have to get to things fixed and so forth. Plus, my sort of real criticism is that I expected it. I didn't go into. I knew roughly what it was going to be like. I knew it was going to be like UNA. I knew you were an AI on a spaceship, and you were like having to help the crew out. I thought that there'd be a little bit more branching of like sort of the dialogue and the storyline. But actually, fact, there isn't really. There is only sort of one way through it. So even the bits where you are given choices, they're hollow because they don't really affect anything. So like
you
at
get
start,
the illusion of choice,
but it's not really choice. So the bit at the start where you can accept or reject what the person says, you have to accept it. If you reject it, the game just will quickly move on as if you hadn't done anything else. They'll just, they'll come up with an excuse, oh, she overrides you and you get in anyway. So,
sure, like they do that in, that is that's another thing they do in Human Revolution. You'll say something, the girl will say, well, fuck you, this is what you're doing. This is what you're here for.
Yeah.
Even if you completely disagree with it, you have to do it.
Yeah. There are...
That's what I meant by illusion of choice. Like, you know, you get an option, but the option doesn't really do...
Yeah, there is anything. No sort of, yeah, you are... There, I would like to, if the storyline branched a little bit more, even if it sort of, like, came back to, like, a central role later, I'd like it if, like, characters could, like, learn this, like, a bit like how Telltale used to do it. I'd like a bit more, although they did eventually get back to the main plot, there was what your earlier decisions had consequences later on. This mm-hmm. hasn't got any of that. This is what I saw. It feels a little bit hollow. So you just do, well, obviously I'm meant to do this, so I'll just do that. There aren't many sort of bits where really you can sort of branch the story off. There's no sort of like fail states really in the game. There's no greater game over it. If you make a mistake, it just resets. It's still fun. It's if you like that sort of, if you like puzzle games, it's quite a neat little puzzle game. So the atmosphere is really good. It is so well done. Particularly when you're flying around the ship, you feel really. There's a bit where you go into another space. It's just really, and it's no power to it. So it's really dark, and it's really creepy. Really well done, because your little spear has like a really small field of view. So you can't see very much because you're only a little flying little sphere. So you ain't got a big camera, so you ain't got a small field of view. So you can't really see anything. So flying about navigating is quite tricky. But again, it's meant to be. It's meant to be like, it's meant to give that sort of feel of claustrophobia. And the relationship you develop with the other character is kind of sweet as well. But the plot line, as I said, the plot line works really well. So we're trying to work out what's going on. Very neat. So very, I actually really enjoyed it as a game. It wasn't quite what I was expecting it to be, but that wasn't a bad thing. I still enjoyed what I got out of it. So, yeah, really neat little game.
Cool.
Right, I think it's that time of year.
Oh, no.
I hope this looks worse out of the audio. Oh, it's fine.
Oh, no.
You've got to make a decision now, Skaz.
I can't. I can barely remember what I played.
I sent you a list.
But that's a cop-out, though. Like,
what's the point of the list? It's not a list. It's not a list. It's jogging your memory.
I was going to say, well, I'm looking down the list, right? And I've got some all right games. I'm so thankful we don't actually do Game of the Year of the Year.
Yeah.
Because if we did, I would be completely stuffed. Because I think the only two games that I've played this entire year that came out in 2023 are Hogwarts Legacy and Street Fighter VI. And the only one of those that I've played to completion so far is Hogwarts Legacy. And literally, if I gave that Game of the Year because it was the only game that I played, it would be such a cop-out. Because pretty much all of the games I was looking forward to this year, and that's not downplaying Hogwarts Legacy. I am not a fan of Harry Potter at all, but I really enjoyed that game. I picked up, was it Phantom Liberty? Cyberpunk?
Oh, yeah.
Didn't play it.
Yeah.
Didn't play it.
Oh.
Armored Core 6. Really wanted to play that. Really love Armored Core games. Love giant robot games. Didn't play it. Like all the cool games that had come out, there was a new like a dragon game. Didn't play it. I was like, but I bought them all. And then, you know, as you know, 24 hours happened, and then I disappeared for a bit. And it was pretty much when I disappeared, all the cool stuff came out.
That's always the way.
And I've got it, but I haven't played any of it. And so, like I say, if it was Game of the Year of the Year, it'd just be such a cop out. I don't want to say stuff like Left 4 Dead. I don't want to say, you know, Dimension Trip and Neptune because that game only lasts like 15 minutes. Renegade, old school arcade game, you know. Euro Truck Simulator 2. Well, that's not the first time. That wasn't the first time we played Euro Truck Simulator. Was it this year we first played Euro Truck?
No, well, we played it. Ozzy played it many years ago. I think me and you played it beginning part of the year, and a little bit later on, me, you, and Zayba played it with the headsets on.
In VR, that game's phenomenal.
Yeah,
absolutely phenomenal. I mean, I'd be halfway tempted to give it to Euro Truck, you know, because I put a lot of time in. No, that must have been this year. Must have been the first time I played Euro Truck, or at least sometime last year. Like, I bought it, launched it, and never really played it.
Yeah.
I think you did play it
because we discussed it. You were playing Euro Truck back when we were doing podcasts at Bard, because me and you had a big old discussion about it.
Oh, really? Mate, I can't remember. Oh, yeah, because I had a character, didn't I? And I got deleted on this last playthrough, so I had to start again. Okay, well, fuck that then. Oh, mate, such a toss-up. I guess there's two games. River City Girls, I think I started playing this year. That was a really fun little beat-em-up based on the Kunio-kun franchise, which is a bunch of games I was playing. So that was Renegade, Double Dragon, River City Ransom, all those. River City Girls is in that same universe. And then there was For the King. I've owned For the King for a long time. Mm. I first saw that game. My wife was playing it ages ago. She played it on stream. I bought it, launched it, made a character, got to that like first kind of intro screen, like when you first get onto the map. I don't think I ever actually played it. And then it was probably earlier on this year. Zabe was like, should we play this game? I was like, yeah, man, sure, cool. Got on it. Fucking love that game.
Yeah. It's a really simple game, but does it really well.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah. The mechanics are so simple, but they work really well.
It's like how would you describe For the King?
Turn-based RPG, well, RPG, turn-based comp. It's actually turn-based full stop, isn't it? Turn-based RPG, you know, general. It's a very generic fantasy land. You know, it's nothing special, but it's whole thing is basically, you know, it's your gear grind, it's your stat grind, but the stats are all very. There's not like 1,000 stats. It's all very straightforward. What I like about it, the combat is like almost role based. So weapons will have like a number of like roles attached to them. And you'll get a percentage of how like success you are as well. So a weapon that you only have to roll for once is probably better than what you have to roll for like four times. It may do more damage, but you have to succeed at four rolls to do it. Whereas the one that only does it once, you only have to roll once. And if you miss, you've missed completely. Whereas if the one does four, if you roll three and say four, you'll do some damage. But yeah, it's mainly
you get
about
a special effect for perfects.
Yeah, for certain weapons, yes. But it's very much a for what I've played, what I liked about it is it's not very grind heavy. Leveling up is quite quick, so you don't have to worry about grinding to get to the next stage. You're not wasting. There's no busy work with it.
It's pretty tough as well. I don't know how you and Zaber found it, but I mean, when me and Zaber first played, we found it quite.
It's very easy
to get stiffed in that game.
So it is. So. The first time me and Zaya played it, Zay obviously knew what was going on, so he helped me out. But he did decide to take on a dungeon that was quite a lot higher level than us.
Bless
and
Zaber.
We got
Bless
wiped.
Him.
So next time we played it, we were a bit more cautious. But you can't be too cautious because there's a time attached to that game.
Yeah.
But where we are on our games nights, we are now at the stage we're about to go to basically fly and do the final boss.
Oh wow!
Yeah, the actual like mission is quite short. So that's is that 5 or 6 hours play time we've got. So now we're about to go do the final boss, roughly five to six hours. And it says the boss's mission says level 10, and we're level 10. So
You guys are doing really well.
Yeah, we. It was a bit tough. The last one was a little bit tough. The last couple of missions were a bit tough, but yeah, we're doing all right. Is that going to be a pick then? Do you think?
You know what? I think so. Like I say, this year has been such a burn for me. And I have played some phenomenal games. River City Girls, Euro Truck, Hogwarts, Street Fighter, Alan Wake. Although Alan Wake, I know. I love Alan Wake. Mate, I could like literally go all of the Remedy series. You know, Remedy games? I love those. All of them. Yeah, just Game of the Year. But they were Game of the Year last year. Yeah, the Game of the Year this year too.
Yeah, it's still Game of the Year. What are you talking about?
Always Game of the Year. Always Game of the Year. Shit, what was the game that I said other than Control? The one that Control, that feels very much like Control, but before Control was Control.
Quantum Break.
That's the one. I really liked that as well. I played that on Linux. That it's a bit of a because you had cutscenes, didn't you? Between, have you played that yet?
No, I'm not started playing it yet. No,
there's like TV episode-y cutscene-y bits,
right?
Where you can choose certain outcomes. They didn't play on Linux at all.
Oh dear.
So I was like, oh, I don't get to watch the episode. Yeah, such and such happened, and I was talking to so and so, and he said, "Go fuck yourself." And I was like, "Yeah." I didn't get to see any of that.
Oh.
The characters would tell me about what had happened. How the hell did you do this? It's like, oh yeah, because so and so said something. I was like, oh, okay. I was just I felt like the other character. What have I got dementia or something? When did that happen? And the other character's like, wow, that was amazing. And I was like, yeah, that sounds amazing.
Oh dear.
But no, I'd probably say if I'm not going to give it to Remedy, which I would, every Remedy game, so good. So good. The Max Payne series, 1, 2, and 3. I think I played those again this year. Max Payne 1, 2, and 3. Those are great. So, so good. Played them on Steam Deck. Beautiful. And Quantum Break. Beautiful. And Control. Oh, so good. Concrete Throw in the game. So, so good. For the King. We're going to give it for the King.
Oh, well, I think that's a really good choice.
To just sit down, hang out with your mates, think you've got things nailed down, only to get steamrolled 10 seconds later.
Yeah.
That's fun. And it's cheap.
It is cheap. It's good fun because although it's an RPG, the missions are quite, level missions and stuff are quite short. So it's, you're not sitting down committing yourself for like a 20-hour game.
Yeah.
No, so it's quite neat.
And it's drop in, drop out too.
It is, yes. It is.
Whoever hosts the game has the main file, and your mates can hop in at any point.
Yeah.
From what I've seen of it, anyway.
Yeah, I believe that is correct. That's good. Times. Right. So my shortlist comes down to three games.
Okay.
And so the three games I picked. The first one was Call of Cthulhu, the game I played back in May.
Yeah.
I liked the atmosphere. I liked sort of like it really drew me in. It also sort of introduced me to a new universe that I didn't know. I haven't really explored. So I've now got a lot more into the Cthulhu mythos. I'm listening to podcasts on this. I've now got the RPG. I've won a couple of RPG games in it as well now.
Oh wow.
Have you
done many of the choose your own adventure style things?
No, I've done with groups. So I've won a couple of group games. I've picked up the complete Lovecraft book series on audiobook, like 50 hours. So I'm going to listen through those. So it's interesting me to a whole universe I had before. So I have to thank for that. My second shortlist is Ghostwire Tokyo. That's not because it's the very. I'll fully concede. It's as a game, it's not the best. It's got a lot of issues as a general game. It's got issues. Mm-hmm. What I like about it was the atmosphere. Yeah. Also, I've not played many games dealing with Japanese folklore and history and that sort of stuff. Again, this game sort of introduced me to it. And I found it really fascinating. I was like, well, I don't know much about this. So it sort of pulled me into like a different society almost take on folklore that I didn't know about.
Yeah.
And I liked that about it. And my final shortlist was Control, which is a really fun game and so forth. So, and out of the three, Control is probably the best of the three in terms of like gameplay. It's solid. It's got fantastic mechanics and so forth. It's got an interesting storyline. I like the visual stuff. It's a good game. However, I'm going to give my game of the year to Ghostwire Tokyo, simply because I love the atmosphere.
Yeah. Okay. Okay.
I said I appreciate the game itself has got lots of problems. Appreciate that. But that one probably gripped me slightly more.
Well, when you first started talking about it, it really did tickle you.
It did, yeah.
I think actually the lack of familiarity you had with Japanese mythology, I think that really kind of clinched
it
for
you. That's what pushed it over the edge for me, yeah.
For me, that was the thing that kind of bored me about it, which was bizarre because I did know a lot of those things. And like a lot of the scenarios were kind of myths I'd already kind of heard of. So I was like, oh, I know what's going to happen next. Oh, I know what's going to happen next. And I was like, oh, no, please don't let this be what that is. It's like, oh, it is. Whilst it's neat, because it didn't surprise me.
Yeah.
I was a bit, and I will admit, I was playing that one on Steam Deck and with FSR enabled, because it rains a lot, doesn't it, in Ghostwire Tokyo?
Yeah.
FSR did not do that game any favors. The upscaling from AMD, that did not do that game any favors at all. On my PC, when I played it on my big boy PC, looked pretty solid. Playing it on the Steam Deck, it was pretty difficult to see a lot of the times. As soon as it started raining, it just turned into like a macro blocky mess. It was
quite brutal. Like I say, it's in terms, if you go through war mechanics, it's definitely not the best. Nowhere near. I totally agree. If I was just going to pick it on per gameplay, I'd probably pick Control. But it was the fact that I liked the fact that I was learning about a culture I knew nothing really about. There was little bits here and there, but most of 99% of it I didn't know anything about. And it led me down a rabbit hole of actually looking up all the myths in more details or reading into the folklore more. It led me down a whole new rabbit hole, which I really liked.
Well, I enjoyed talking to you about it. Because as I say, when I was playing the game, it didn't do anything for me, but talking to you about it was like, that's pretty fucking cool. Like, you know, he's now seeing this, and that's pretty fucking cool.
Yeah. And that's what swung it for me in the end. That is literally what pushed me over the edge for me in the end. That's my game of the year.
Fucking, that's rocking, dude. Good call.
Yeah.
Good call.
Yeah. You thought it was going to be Control, didn't you?
Oh, I was hyping, mate. I was hyping. I'm pretty sure I played Control like last year. Did I not give Control my game of the year last year?
According to the, if you go by Steam achievements, you're playing in 2021. According to Steam achievements,
Did I give it my game of the year in 2021? Because if I didn't,
I can't remember. I'd have to go back and look.
See, this is what I mean. I can't remember when I played these things.
Well,
I've got
a YouTube Studio open, so I can go back through and have a look and see what you gave last. Yeah, so there we go.
It's probably something terrible. I'm really good at giving terrible game stuff. Happened to mention Neptunia 3.
Let's have a look.
Senran Kagura, Peach Beach Splash. Oh, yeah.
Where are we? Christmas 2020. Huh? What are you doing there?
I think you just might have got some headphone on the microphone noise. ASMR, headphone on microphone.
Yeah, I'm not sure what's going on here. Here we go, date, okay. That's better. For some reason, it was like jumping. I'm not sure how I filtered it, but it's giving me some... Sorry about that. I was giving us some weird results I was getting.
Well, can I just throw out there? I've noticed that sometimes YouTube search on channels turns into like a general search sometimes. So like if I'm on the phone and I do a channel search, I can't remember, it might be on the phone or something. I know that I've done a channel search recently. I'm like, okay, scroll. I was like, hang on, I recognize that thumbnail. That's not this channel. And you look and it's like, oh yeah, it's put it in the search results for the channel, but it's from some fucker else. I was like, then what the fuck are you doing? That's not what I'm looking for.
Oh, I know.
Actual proper search results are now part of YouTube Premium.
Oh, there you go. I know why I couldn't find it, because I was looking the live stream section. It's not a live stream, it's a pre-recorded, isn't it? So that's why. Not pre-recorded, but you know.
Never, ever, no, live, no, completely live. No, this is live.
Fully live, yeah, 100% live. Here we go, Christmas of 2022. So,
interject, this is live.
Right, do you want to know what you gave yours to?
Go on, mate.
You gave your, last year, you gave your game of the year to Xenith, The Last City, and Demeo.
Yeah, Demeo, I could say it, yeah.
Yeah.
Xenith's all right.
Yeah. Let's have a look at 2021.
If it ain't Control. That might have been Monster Hunter, actually.
Let's have a look. 2021.
Look, I love this. Like the Dead Space, just, you know.
Oh, I'll edit this bit out if I remember.
If you remember. He's not going to listen back to this. Why would you do that? That's terrible.
I just scrub through him, mate. Yes, that's all I do.
Oh, mate, I used to sit there and listen to this whole fucking thing over again.
Christmas 2021. So, you...
We should put a Game of the Year section on the website so that every year someone asks, what was the Game of the Year? It's there.
Yeah. Yep, you picked Control for 2021.
Yes.
Yep, and I picked Disco Elysium. There we go.
It's not as good as Control. Just saying. That game is great.
It's a fun game. Oh, I totally get it. It's a fun game.
Lobbing loads of concrete at people, chucking filing cabinets at people. Oh, yeah. So good.
Yeah.
It tickles me in all the right places. No one knows how to satisfy me better than me, other than Jesse Faden.
Oh yeah, he's such a great character.
Love her. Such a good character. Absolutely love her.
Love her. Right then. So I think that is that then, Skaz. Anything else you want to do talk about before we close up for the night?
Oh man, that's absolutely everything. Game of the Year is so difficult though.
It is, isn't it?
So hard. Like even though I've only got a shit list, I could have given that to any of them.
So I mean, for me, I played Call of Cthulhu, and that was like, that's going to probably be my game of the year. And it was sort of top of the list. Right up until I played Ghostwire Tokyo, it's like, I really got into it. It's like, that's probably my game of the year. And I got to Control, I thought, I really like Control.
Mm-hmm.
But I've been umming and arming for quite some time. But I had to go with my gut. My gut says Ghostwire Tokyo, so I'm going with that.
Sure. I mean, I think it's funny, right? Because I've given it to For the King, but I've played River City Girls through twice.
Yeah.
It's just fucking
And
nuts.
Ironically, we've never discussed me and you have never discussed For the King on the podcast.
That's just crazy, that, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, because I was really hoping, because, you know, you'd played it for Games Note with Zaber. I was really, dude, every time we did it, me and Zaber did a For the King stream, we're like, yeah, this would be great to play with Ran. We need to do this for the Ran Nerds podcast. By the time For the King was on the roster, like, I was out. I was fucking gutted when you guys started playing. I was like, no. Because I think that was like the Games Note directly after I'd fucked off as well.
It was pretty close because me and Sarah discussed what we were going to play, and he'd been talking about this for a while. So, well, should I play the game that you've been wanting to play for a while? Let's do that. So,
devastating.
Devastating. No, but between all three of us, we've all played it together.
Yeah. We've played it together by association.
Yes. No, so I think that's a good place to close off. Sure. So I just want to say thank you to everybody who's been joined and watched through the stream this evening. And this is the podcast. So our next podcast will be on the, he said, hey, look at the diary quickly, Thursday the 4th of January into the new year. So by the time we see you there, we'll hope you've had a good New Year's and a good Christmas by the time we see you there. Our next games night will be on Wednesday the 3rd of January at 8:30, or podcast will be at 6:30. Wednesday the 3rd will be our next games night. I'm not sure what game we'll be playing. There'll be some more of our Christmas special game night coming out on the channel, so keep an eye out for that. We're playing through a puzzle game, First Class Escape, Train of Thought. Some of these episodes will probably already be out by the time this comes up. And once again, I just want to wish you guys all a Merry Christmas and Happy New Year, and we'll see you all in 2024. So for me, the Suffolk Ram,
Skazius,
we'll see you all then.
Don't eat too much chicken and turkey and bacon. And
mate, I'm planning to be in a food coma most of Christmas. That's my plan.
Eat and be merry, goddammit. Eat and be merry.
Very.